Now, earlier we spoke to chimney sweep Kieran Gould. He also delivers coal, of course, about the living conditions some of our older people are living in and the struggles that they have. And to tell us more about her own experience is Katrina Toomey, who's a community activist and humanitarian. Morning, Katrina.
Good morning, Mick.
Some people make it their life's work to be an activist and a humanitarian. You've done more than most, so we thank you for that. Would you agree with Kieran Gould that a huge amount of people are struggling out there, unfortunately?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not just elderly people. It's right across the board. It's young people with families, you know, and we see a lot of that. And then their hands are tied because when they're forced to fight for the very services that are meant to protect them, that's the housing, support, stability, etc., it can wear them down in ways that aren't always visible. You know, it's just so tough on people, especially the elderly, you know, and they have to go from pillar to post to look for this and to look for that. And sometimes they can't do that because it's very difficult for them being elderly. And then with the young people, you know, if they're living in very bad conditions, and I'm talking about, like, there's massive amounts of rent being paid out, massive amounts of hat being paid out to landlords that are not keeping their properties up to scratch. And that's not right. That shouldn't be happening.
And how can that be countered? How can we stand against that?
Well, I suppose for a lot of people out here like that, you know, their phone calls are unanswered, their forms are rejected, the door closes a little bit more, you know, and for them it's just, you know, they're trying to keep the hope, but everything has been used up, their energy, you know, how to process this and how to get around it. And for elderly people, we all understand that's very, very difficult. So for them, it's not just, an administrative struggle, because it is that already, but their emotional strength and their emotional headspace is eroded completely.
Yeah. You know, I often wonder, Katrina, how the state can give out to an elderly person an old age pension. They can give them free travel, but they expect them to be almost a teenager when it comes to filling out forms.
Exactly. And like that, we'd have a lot of people that would ask for help with the forms, they don't understand them. And they can be difficult for even us filling them out as well. And we'd have to ring them and say, what do we answer to this? Where, you know, what's the correct answer? Are we reading it properly? And like, if we're dealing with forms and we're supposed to be used to them, we're never used to them. So you can imagine a person getting all these forms for the first time, not being able to navigate their way through it. So that's very, very difficult for them and interferes emotionally with them. They cry, they're hurt, they don't know what to do.
Yeah. So wouldn't an elderly person's help desk in County Hall or City Hall be a great boon to them?
It would be absolutely wonderful for them, where they could go in and sit down and say, I don't know what to write here, and I don't know what to write there, because that's what they tell us. And sometimes they might get a letter, and it could be a simple letter to say that there's nothing wrong, but they still think there's something wrong. Yep. Because they just don't understand them. So there's that fear the whole time that when you get these letters that are official, that you're up, you know, some creek, like, you know, and whatever. And, you know, we hear that, we see that a lot. And it is very, very,
okay.
It is.
You were listening to Jason Poole in my interview with him on his late sister Jennifer's impending ratification of the law that's going to bear her name, Jenny's Law. Do you see a lot of abuse and coercive control in your work?
Absolutely. And I think domestic violence is really up there. Like, it's huge, and it leaves deep wounds, I suppose, long before the world ever sees those wounds. And for the victim, the abuse doesn't end when they walk out the door. They face a terrifying and uncertain road. You know, they might have nowhere safe to live, no stability to hold on to, because the husband might just, like, own the house or have his name on the house and something like that, or a partner. And the constant fear that the perpetrator, you know, still will hold over them, and their entire life can be uprooted in a single moment, and yet they're the ones expected to navigate again a maze of services to retell their trauma over and over and over again. And somehow stay strong through it all. Well, sure, you're broken the first day when you go to these services. So how can you stay strong? You know, and I do think that accountability matters. No such low and abuse to hide behind silence or loopholes or bureaucracy while the victim can be left unprotected and unheard. the Gardaí are very good in what they do, but they still have to obey whatever guidelines they have inside. So it's, again, the government needs to look at stuff, and every request from help from a victim should be treated as urgent, because it is urgent. If you're going looking for help, there's obviously something bad happening to you.
And well, I think the one thing that came out of this morning's conversation with Jason is that the warning signs, the red flags, should be noticed. Yeah. And if they're noticed, they shouldn't be dispelled early. They should be absolutely concentrated on, or maybe taken greater heed of at the early stages. And if you're aware at the early stages and there's a constant repetition, you're almost solid in your conviction there's something really wrong here.
Yeah, and you see, what we probably don't have is interim safeguards. When you present yourself and you're looking for help, you have to go through all the systems, like the court systems and the whole lot and everything, and you could be still being destroyed, like, while this is happening. So it has to be a safe place for people to go to, safe accommodation, protective measures, immediate support. They must all be put in place when a victim reaches out. These steps shouldn't be optional. They're lifelines to the victim. This is a victim who has found the courage to ask for help, and they should never, ever, ever be met with hesitation. They deserve to be believed, protected and guided, and towards safety, and with compassion and immediacy. I think immediacy is the word.
Yeah, but to officialdom, Katrina, to officialdom and to authority and to those who provide the services, you know, 9 to 5 and a kind of a in a working week, somebody coming to them for the first time is first contact. That first contact might have been months or even years of ticking off worry after worry after worry, and slowly building up the mental courage to actually apply to officialdom for help. But then I'm not saying they're meeting a brick wall and that everyone in officialdom, you know, is going to buff them around, apply lots of red tape. But first contact is first contact from their side.
But the rules have to come from the government, and we need more support inside. There are support groups, the Gardaí are very good, the hospitals are very good. Everybody that's in on this is very good for helping the person, but they need immediacy. They need something straight away, because I'm sure if somebody goes looking for help, they know that if the husband or the partner finds out, they're in more trouble, you know, they're worried, the fear, and this is they're petrified, you know, absolutely petrified. They don't know what's going to happen. And then if they go back home and they face another beating or whatever, after they're presenting, that's where I think the difficulty lies for a lot of people. Sometimes then they just, you know, stop presenting and stay quiet for a while, until, you know, it happens again and again, and they have to go again. And I think the very first time a person should go, there should be a place where they could sit down, tell their story, and then somebody could decide, we can do this for you today. This is what we can do.
We deal with a lot of distress on this program. We deal with a lot of heartbreak, and we deal with a lot of people asking for help. And I think the default is the government should do more in every single case. If we were to compile a list of everything that everybody on this program asks of the government, they would want to be superhuman. Where do you see the pitfalls? Where do you see the lack of support?
I see the lack of support in that when somebody presents, there's no immediate decisions. You know, they have to go through the paperwork. They have to go through everything, and that's the way it is. You know, they go to the domestic violence centres, they go to the sexual violence centres, they go to, and look, there's a lot of stalking as well from partners and husbands, and that's outrageous, you know, as well to be left continue, you know, and it's like they have to prove themselves over and over and over again. And I suppose what I'd say is, how many beatings do they have to suffer before they're believed?
Okay, and of course, this is anyone who's struggling, it's affecting their mental health as well.
Absolutely, and it's affecting their families as well. And, you know, in these situations, and I know there's some men abused as well, so I'm not going to exclude them as well. Everybody should be entitled to this.
One in five, apparently, just taking it on the incoming calls for help. One in five men, 1 in 8 children, the rest women.
Yeah. And no one should have to rebuild their life alone after surviving what they've endured, because, you know, beatings are heavy duty stuff. Even this mental torture, like, that's heavy duty stuff. And they deserve every possible safeguard so that they can first breed, I suppose, and then heal and move forward. And like everything should be kind of like a one-stop shop for them, for what they need, because domestic violence is serious. Stalking is serious, you know. It's very, very, very serious. And it should be up there, like, you know, as with the number one things that are happening in this country, like, to people. Nobody should be beaten by anybody. Nobody should suffer mental torture at the hands of anybody. And then when the families find out, like, it could be too late. That person's mental health could be down the gutter, like, you know, they don't know where it is. They just can't cope anymore.
Katrina, thanks for everything you did, everything you do and continue to do, okay? You're one of the very few who've dedicated your life to community activism and being a good humanitarian. Can you stay with me for a moment? But I just want to take this moment before I talk to you about something else, just to say that the Women's Aid 24-hour helpline is 1-800-341-900. The Women's Aid 24-hour helpline is 1-800-341-900. Now, some weeks ago, your daughter Alicia came home from work and she had a powerful request. And of course, you're a superwoman, right? She said, you know everyone, ma'am. Is there a chance we could get a minibus for the wonderful students in Skull Ashling? Tell me all about that.
Well, that's where she works and she loves it down there. You know, she really loves the students and it's, you know, she's really determined, like, to help them in every way she can. And she came in one day and she just threw herself on the sofa and she said, "Mom, you know, do you know everyone?" She said, "Can you get a minibus for us, for the students?" And I was laughing and then she showed me, I said, "What do you mean?" And she showed me then the I donate thing on the Skull Ashland page. So I said, "All right." And I rang Dave Feeney, who climbs Coran to Hill every week, you know, and whatever, and him and a group of lads. And then he spoke to another friend, Dan Cunningham, and Dan's, every year there's a memorial climb up Coran to Hill for Dan's brother, John Cunningham. So then Dave got back to me to say, Dan said they'll do the John Cunningham memorial for Skull Ashling, for the climb.
Oh, it's great. So, it's still the John Cunningham Memorial Climb, but it's been dedicated to the school, children of Skull Ashling. Skull Ashling, by the way, is a special school in Ballintemple, am I right?
36 students, yeah, absolutely. So what we did was we had kind of a morning down there, and I got one of Alicia's friends, he's a soldier, Ryan Goldsmith, got in touch to say they'd climb the mountain, like they'd help out. And so there's quite a few soldiers going up. And then IUNVA, who are the Irish United Nations Veterans Association, they're going to have collections in Ballyvlan and another few places on the 19th. And then we have, there's another soldier down in Limerick, and he's already done his collection and sent it up. And another guy in Donegal, like so. And we have some boxes going up. We have Cahill Crowley, and we have Aaron O'Donoghue. And they're climbing up with Conal Thomas from the boxing board. So we have a huge amount of people, and I suppose Alicia's going up as well, which was part and parcel of the bargain, like that. We thought that she climbed the mountain as well. So
you made her commit to that, did you?
Yeah. So she, but you know, she's always wanted to do it, and I got sick the last time she was supposed to do it. Like so, she's going up now, you know, and whatever. And we're hoping to be down there then in Cronin's Yard. I won't be climbing, but we'll hopefully be singing like down in Cronin's Yard for when they come down. But you know, the beauty of when they reach the top of the mountain, there's an accordion player going up with them. She's bringing up her accordion, and they're all going to sing, all the climbers. They're going to sing for the children, and the song they've chosen is Scorn Not His Simplicity.
Oh, the Phil Coulter classic.
Yeah. They climbed the mountain before for the missing persons, and I made them sing Love Rescue Me when they were up there. They assured me they'd never sing it, but my God, did they sing it.
Love Rescue Me, that's not a U2 song, is it?
It is a U2 song.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's a great song, you know. Mm-hmm. But and the night before, then the climb, Dave has gone up with the bears, our big, huge bears. So we have, obviously, we have Bear Ashling gone up and Bear Hope, because for us, it's always about the hope. If we don't keep up the hope, there's nothing left for anybody, really. And we just have to keep it there. So we have Bear Hope, who's been, you know, all over the place with us. And so Dave is going to go up and he's going to light up the bears. So when any climber goes up that morning, there'll be the bears up at the cross, and they'll be all lit up welcoming everybody. And it's an amazing sight to see. It's absolutely magical. And loads of people that went up for the missing persons that time, as they were just climbing the mountain, came over to tell the lads like that they've lost loved ones and they would be climbing the mountain in their memory. And when they came up and when they saw the bears, they said they felt like it was a bit of a sign or a bit of hope that they actually went up on that day. And there was tears and there was smiles and there was everything, but everybody joined in. So we have all the words of the songs printed out. There's no climber going to escape. So they lost.
Everyone's going to sing. Mention as well for Super Value and Glanmire. They're going to sponsor the water, the fruit and the protein bars for all the climbers.
Ryan. Liam Ryan is absolutely amazing down there. And Leslie then.
They're in Grange as well, aren't they, the Ryans?
They're Grange as well, they are. And they're absolutely fantastic. They're a great supermarket. Like, and they're just, but Liam Ryan is just one. You know, he's a great man. He's a good man. And nothing is ever too much for him. And he just supports so many things. Like, if you look at everything he supports, he's amazing. But he's always very good to us.
All right. It's a fabulous fundraiser. Where can people find a place to support? It's on idonate.ie, is it?
Yeah, that's on the Skull Ashling page. So they just Google Skull Ashling. It's S-C-O-I-L and then A-I-S-L-I-N-N. So they Google that and it'll come up on their page. Or if they want to climb, we want the climbers. And if you're singers, you know, we might have a lot of fellows that play instruments and girls and they might want to come down, climb the mountain and play up the top of the mountain. It's a great experience to say you played up the top of Cron Tool. So anybody that wants to join, they can just contact myself or Dave Feeney.
Okay, and well done to the lads from the Defence Services. Credit to the Army, credit to the Veterans Absolutely. Association. Let's not forget the whole reason and the need for doing all this. And that is these 36 children, truly need this bus, and every bit of support brings us closer. So it's great. You know, we often highlight need on this programme, but when you're addressing need in such a positive way, you're to be saluted, Katrina. And well done. I don't think anybody can galvanise support quite like you. You're kind of the Bob Geldof of Cork here.
Yeah, I'm here like him anyway. Somebody wants to look after that.
Thanks, Katrina, as always. Thank you.
Thanks. And can I just mention the Road Bowlers Association in Cork? And then there's friends of Dave, they've accompanied their head first. And all of them, they've all got on board, like, and they're all doing stuff. So we think we're going to make, like, there's 8,000 in the I Donate. So obviously there's 50,000 short, so we're going to give that some bashing. Yeah.
So it's 58,000 you need in total. Thanks a million, Katrina.